3, 2, 1.
Derek.
Stu.
Been a while since I saw your face.
Yeah, thank you.
I was going to say something else.
I've seen some other stuff, but the face has been a minute.
Yeah. You send me way too many text messages.
No, it's great to be back, though, man. We're behind the bar. We're ready to go.
Yeah. You're doing more work at this bar.
Oh, yeah. Dude, this whole bar is going away. I have a whole brand new bar that's coming. This whole man cave will look like a sexy little lounge, dude.
Like,
it's going to be sweet.
You are far more adventurous than I. But look, we shouldn't dilly-dally.
Yeah.
You know, pitter-patter, let's get at her. We have two incredible guests today from Exhibit A Brewing.
Exhibit A Brewing. You had to tell me about that.
Yeah, so Exhibit A Brewing is a great brewery on the East Coast that I have never tried before. They don't distribute out to Nevada yet. We're going to try to convince them today to do so, because I'm not going to lie, I did try one of the beers that they sent us before today's episode.
You know what the funny part about that is I knew you would.
You knew.
And so when I asked you about the beer, I'm like, Stu, you know, you're trying to save some of those for the show, because I knew you would try one.
Such an asshole.
And I'm proud of you, though. You only had one.
I only had one. It was like a week ago, and I was like, you know what? I'm really in the mood for a beer. And like, first of all, we'll post some of this stuff on social, but their can art is incredible.
Yeah.
So it called to me. But anyway, I did have self-restraint. I waited mostly, except for that one. And now we are going to share this incredible experience with Matthew and Kelsey. But before we do, Derek, should we just let it roll?
I think we should let it roll.
Let it roll.
Hi, my name is Stu Hawk, and this is my podcast about all the weird, crazy, spooky things that scare me and my guests, and the one thing that helps us forget all about them. Ladies and gentlemen, beer freaks. Dun, dun, dun.
And we're back. And we're back.
We're back.
We're back again, back in the saddle again. Steven Tyler would say, and we have two great guests, as we said, from Exhibit A Brewing.
We don't know that yet. Just starting.
That's true. We don't. It could be like the shittiest guest ever.
Hard, but true. Brilliant. And no matter how good or bad they are, we can always cut it to make it sound good.
Very true.
So, you guys don't know how much we cut out of some of these episodes.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
You can guess. So Matthew Steinberg, Kelsey Roth, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you guys
for
joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And by the way, they're at East Coast time.
Yeah. Right?
So it's late for them. And so even more thank you for being gracious to us West Coasters who are like just finished our work day. So we found a time that hopefully kind of worked for both. But quick intro. Okay. Matthew Steinberg, co-founder, head brewer of Exhibit A Brewing Company since the inception in September 2015.
Love it.
That is coming up on their seventh year.
It's crazy.
And by the way, in Las Vegas, seven is a very, very lucky number.
Mm-hmm.
So we're almost there. And Kelsey Roth is the general manager, Exhibit A Brewing Company, certified Cicerone.
Beautiful.
Which basically means anything that we say about beer, he's going to say bullshit, and he's just going to say your taste buds are shit. I'll tell you what tastes good and what doesn't.
I'm ready to mansplain everything.
I love it. Please do. Please do, because Derek needs it.
No.
Sorry, man. I had to.
That's all right.
Gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having us.
So, tell us, you guys obviously both handle the business end and the brewing end of this incredible brewery. Tell us a little bit about it. I mean, where did this come from? You guys are relatively new. You guys are, you know, you guys are creating great brewery. You guys are creating great can art, which I definitely want to talk about. But tell us a little bit about where this came from.
So, I love that you said we're pretty new. This is my 24th year of my career, so I feel super new right now from you saying that, and I appreciate it. I've been a brewer in Massachusetts for that whole time. And about 7 years ago, we started to decide, okay, it's time to get a brewery open. My partner and I decided what the plan was, where it would be. We took over the former Jack's Abbey Brewery, bought their equipment and you know, decided, okay, let's go. A business plan was just kind of like a rough sketch. And we decided, okay, this is the name, Exhibit A. And Kelsey can tell you more about the story behind why Exhibit A. That's a big question.
Need to know.
I like to say thin air because it's just leaves some, you know, some questions out there.
I assumed one of you guys were lawyers. I
right, that of course. That came from. Yeah, we wanted that. We wanted you to assume that. So Kelsey was our first hire, and I found Kelsey through he worked for some people that I knew in the retail side of the business, and I knew he had a creative mind. I knew he had a great marketing mind, and I wanted him to try to take the helm of, you know, general management of the business, but also the design element of what we're trying to do, come up with some cans, take over our social media, create a tap room, all of these things. So we hired one brewer and Kelsey, and then a team of tap room soldiers, and kind of figured it out as we went. I think we just celebrated, or we're about to celebrate 6 years. Is that true?
Yeah,
we opened
2016.
We formed it. The company was formed in 2015, and then it took a rough, you know, 6 to 8 months to get it open.
Got it.
You know, but yeah, so we are about to celebrate our sixth anniversary in September. So we've got some time.
Well, that blows the relevance to Las Vegas completely out of the water.
Well, no, but on, you know, in August, we will be entering our seventh year.
It still works.
It's in the same year.
So we'll wait to release this podcast episode in August.
Of 2020.
We'll wait another year.
That's right. We'll wait a while, you know. We'll be good.
So it's been a fun ride, you know.
Ups and downs, obviously, with COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, because first of all, from what I understand, and obviously we have got to go out to the East Coast, check out this brewery, because I hear you guys have an incredible beer garden. Is that accurate?
It is. It is.
We it opened, I guess, 3 years ago now. And like the first year was like pre-COVID. You know, it's just like an awesome space. We basically transformed a parking lot into like this really comfortable, great vibe beer garden. We planted, like, set up trees and planters, and built you know, benches and tables out of reclaimed wood, and built like a nice little beer shed, and it just, you know, created this really nice vibe, like a little oasis in the middle of you know, this industrial area of Framingham, Massachusetts, which is about 45 minutes west of Boston. And you know, then when COVID hit, it became just a great space that could still accommodate people with all the restrictions in place, because we were able to space all the tables apart, so everything was 6 feet away. We were able to quickly pivot to table service. So all of our servers who used to just pour beer behind a bar, now they're like walking around with tablets, you know, taking orders and delivering beers, and and God bless them. They, you know, pivoted on a dime and figured out how to do that quickly. And it just became a good space to be outdoors, during the pandemic, and still, be able to meet with people and, and spend some time outside. Yeah. So, and as restrictions loosen, we were able to loosen things up as well, but, it's just really become a nice community touch point, a place for people to, gather and even have events. And, the teachers from the surrounding schools come by after class, and hang out and have some beers with us. And
I thought you were going to say a field trip to the brewery. I thought that was going to be where we were going with
With teachers, we found out, love to drink beer in beer gardens.
Sure. Totally, so, 100%.
So all of the schools in our area, are a vital service, to all the teachers in the area. So
you guys are an essential business during that time.
Mm-hmm. We're heroes.
Technically. Yeah. I mean, we've all been, we can't work from home, so we've been going in every single day, this whole time for the last 2 years, wearing masks every day and, just doing what we need to do.
What would we have done without the brewers in our lives? Seriously, 100%.
I mean, most of the brewers I talk to work straight through it. We've had to. Thank goodness we've had the opportunity to. Also, I think I just want to add to what Kelsey was saying about the beer garden. One of my favorite things about the beer garden is that from day one, Kelsey and I had a very, very clear agreement about the types of entertainment we'd want to have in our brewery. And one of them was independent original bands. Mm-hmm. And we've really done an amazing, these guys have, in the tap room, Kelsey and Adam and Alex, who's our tap room assistant tap room manager, they handle all of that stuff, whether it's comedy shows from local comics and having original live bands, which we've discovered some amazing bands by doing this. Like we have, you know, there's local bands that I would have never heard of that unless they played at our brewery. And we've discovered that we've had, you know, some of these people have had storied careers, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Guys like Dan Colley playing in our brewery, who was in Morphine, who's now in you know, plays with the Macrotones or plays with you know, he played with Dub, right? He played with Dub Apocalypse.
Dub Apocalypse. And yeah. And we've had the guys from the Cars show up to shows. Okay.
So it's been amazing to have a place for that. And in the winter we do that in the brewery, on the brewery floor, actually, where we corner, you know, clear out the area and
Have a lot of interior space to like be able to do those kinds of things?
We have a nice space where we set up like a big movie screen and they have my parents' old rug from their living room from the 70s as like the drum rug. And we have bands, we have room for bands to set up for like 85, 90 people.
Yeah, 80 right? people or so. Yeah. 80,
that's solid.
That's big.
So there's a great local band from Boston. Yeah. I'm not sure if you guys know about them. They're actually called Boston.
Sure.
Very unknown, new guys. Fly under the radar. Yeah. You guys might want to look into.
We can only book them on a Thursday night.
When Aerosmith isn't playing, yeah, we can maybe book them. Sure.
Yes, that's one of the biggest things, though, man. That is so cool that you take like local bands and do that. I think COVID showed us a massive like community, like building kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, and now things like this, like we can do these Zoom calls and all this different stuff.
We can make it work.
For as bad as COVID was, I got to say, like it did show us some really cool, useful kind of almost building this like relationship with people, even though it may not be here in the room.
Well, we adapted, but I'd still rather have you guys here or I'd rather be there in their brewery.
Yeah. You need to come here.
Yeah. Well, not right now because we're getting like a major blizzard nor'easter coming this weekend. It's like 10 degrees outside.
So the beer garden's kind of off limits right now is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It sure is.
But kind of back to the music thing too, is we realized too, when we were figuring out, you know, we obviously both Matthew and I both love original bands. We both played music, you know, and so we wanted to support that scene, but we realized quickly that a lot of the clubs in Boston and, you know, the surrounding areas that used to support local original bands were dying off and they were having to close. You know, they weren't able to, for one reason or another, and especially during COVID, a lot of them couldn't survive. And breweries have really kind of picked up that mantle. And there's a lot of places for a cover band to play, but there's not a lot of places for a band that's doing original music to play. Wow. So we really wanted to focus on that aspect of it and say, hey, we've got a space for you. And right now I'm booking August of 2022. Right. Wow. so that's, there's that much demand, you know, that bands are like, you know, hey, can we come play? I'm like, yeah, but I'm booking in August. Yeah. What date do you want? So,
so let me ask you that. I mean, obviously COVID impacted everyone differently, from a business standpoint. I mean, did you guys see a slowdown? Did you see an uptick or was it just different?
I mean, overall business wise, I mean, the tap room definitely, saw an initial big push on cans to go, but zero beer for onsite. Right. Yeah. So we went from like a really good solid on-site business, whether it's winter or summer, to kind of like, nada, right? Like immediately zero. We closed.
Yeah, we didn't fill a keg for like 8 months.
Right.
Wow. Like we did not fill a single keg for 8 months.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and we had to take that beer that was stuck in kegs that couldn't be consumed because bars were closed to our good friends that own a distillery who have made this kind of cat's meow moonshine that is in whiskey barrels, and that's aging in barrels right now.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. I mean, so we reuse the product that would have otherwise been thrown away. But
yeah,
so that's kind of that, you know, that uptick in can sales to go was amazing. We needed it desperately. And I would say the first few months it was kind of a little bit wildfire. Like people were freaking out, like that people were buying cases at a time instead of four packs, you know.
Yes.
And thank goodness for that. Overall, we had like a tiny bit of growth in 2020, and we had a slightly more growth in 21. But the cost of doing business offset all of that, of course.
Oh, interesting. And, okay, so yeah. Because you have to put more protocols in place, you have to hire.
I mean, just spending was higher. Just spending overall was higher. Like overhead has increased by 17-18%. You know, freight alone is just on fire.
Yeah, I know all about
even,
that. Yeah.
But even
yeah.
Like the difference between like filling a keg, you have the keg and that's reusable, and a keg collar, which is a piece right. of paper, as opposed to the can, the label, the keg, you know, or the case tray, the pack tech, you know, the lid, you know, all of these things. So the cost of goods sold per ounce, you know, goes through the roof when you're putting a beer in a can as opposed to, you know, on draft on a keg. So.
Yeah. Sure. So because we had to pivot to basically going from, you know, 65% cans, 35% draft to basically 99% cans for 2020 or 96% or something, some crazy number.
Yeah.
It's of your dollar sales. It just makes everything more expensive, which thank goodness we had the business because, you know, we sold, you know, our most beer we ever sold in 21, you know, which is wow. ironic since we like behind the veil a little bit, we didn't make any money, you know,
I mean, we just sold more beer.
We just sold more beer. We survived. We were able to give. Yeah. I mean, I would say that we thrived because we were able to give some raises. We gave promotions. We didn't let anyone go except for a few, you know, a handful of part-time people. Those part-time people were just, you know, beer garden staff that, you know, beer garden was closed in the winter. So,
yeah.
But we did bring back everyone that we could, when we opened, and, you know, our production staff was not only whole, it needed to grow.
Yeah.
So we hired people, and, you know, that part, the fact that we were able to hire, promote, give raises, pay all bills,
it's huge,
like it's unbelievable.
Huge.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Huge. And not qualify for help.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. Now, did going 99% can kind of give you, like, did it almost release a little bit more creativity as far as what you were going to make? Because now you had to do all this can and like can art. So yep. Did you think of can art essentially? And then like, oh, we got to make a beer for that.
I mean, that's hilarious because the way it used to happen.
That's not how it works.
No, it's not. But it used to happen that way where I'd be like, Kelsey, I've got an idea for a beer. And he's like, cool. What's it called? I'm like, I don't know. And then, but I have this idea. And then like we would come up with a name. I'm like brewing the beer next week and we don't even have a design yet, you know? And then yeah. Kelsey would like, you know, I mean, in the case of this one's a little different because it was planned really well, but Just a Kitten. My daughter,
Just a Kitten. For the people who are listening, by the way, Just a Kitten, it's a silver can, but it's got a kitten playing with a ball.
With a ball of yarn. And it's a blue. It's actually blue. It has a little
bluish can, metallic blue.
So my now 20-year-old stepdaughter, Isabella, did the illustration.
Whoa,
and Kelsey did all the design element, like, and he does all of the can art that she doesn't draw, which she's just done she's only done a couple of them. This was our cat, you know, is our cat, I should say, Toby. Awesome. But
what's the name of the cat? We got
Toby the cat. Toby the cat.
Toby the cat.
Oh, and you said I'm allowed to swear? Toby is an asshole. He is the biggest asshole.
Dude, I concur. I got a dog who's a dick, but you love him. He is a dick. You love him otherwise.
Your dog is awesome, but he is a dick.
Oh, nice. That is all, Kelsey. That can you have in your hand there. We're going to need you to come in on Saturday. Yeah.
I had to put this up here, and we'll post this on social, but
yeah.
it's called we're going to need you to come in on Saturday, Scotch Ale. And if you have not seen Office Space, that'll mean absolutely nothing to you.
And but, who are you right. if you haven't seen Office Space?
What's wrong with you? By the way, stop listening to our podcast if you haven't. This was actually the first can I saw when I pulled it out of the box that you guys sent. And I was just blown away. I was like, holy cow, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
So where, are you guys just big Office Space fans?
I think everyone in the brewery is a fan of the movie, but but the name actually came from one of our brewers who, I think he was just making a joke that he was going to have to come in on Saturday.
Matt Dinner. Yeah.
And he was joking that he was going to have to like come in on Saturday, I think, to finish making the beer or something like that. And they were like, well, we now have to call it that.
Absolutely.
So I had to get Lumberg on there. And this label has had a few different iterations, but I really like where it's landed at this point. And it has a nice feel to it. And we haven't gotten a cease and desist yet from anybody. So
I was going to ask about that because it's spot on, man. Now, did your stepdaughter do the drawing on this or who?
No, that's all Kelsey.
No, I did that one.
Oh, yeah.
Good work, man.
Yeah, she's only and done. This is the only one that she's done. The kitten. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you got the red stapler in there. That's an important
key. 100%.
Had to be done.
We have a lot of fans though. That there are a lot of fans of us that also love the movie. And can't wait for Scottsdale to come out every year.
So this is a seasonal release then.
Yeah. We brew it once a year. Yeah.
When do you guys usually release?
It comes out in this year it came out in December, right? It's going to start coming out early November. Yeah, it's going to come out before Thanksgiving. I think next year is the plan. Every year we kind of creep it back a little bit just because we want to have it available for the time of which we want you to consume it. Not necessarily, I don't want to release a summer beer in April like the rest of the breweries. I kind of want you to consume it when it's available. I want it to be available when it's appropriate.
I'm so glad you said that because one of the things that this is where I definitely become a little bit of a basic bro. But I do like pumpkin beers.
I'm okay with that. We make a weirdo pumpkin beer you might like.
Ooh, I want to hear a little bit more about that. And tell me when you release it, because here's the thing. Like, I've noticed how pumpkin beers... Thank you.
No, it's not. It's actually, it comes out in August.
I'm about to throw you under the bus.
We brew it in August. We release it in September. Yeah.
Okay. So September is acceptable, but I swear, I think I saw some pumpkin beers come out at the end of July this year.
Oh, yeah.
Everything just keeps moving. Mm-hmm. We're going to see Christmas stuff like in July.
In January.
And then actually by October, I couldn't find a pumpkin beer anymore. When I actually wanted one, so it's just mine. So what's unique about your pumpkin beer? I'd love to, because
so we
get a little weird with it nowadays.
So we call it Cake, and it is it's actually a reference to, I think, the band Cake.
Yes.
It's very much a reference. Yeah.
I mean, the label is definitely a reference. It looks like a Cake record, but the beer itself is actually a collaboration with a bakery that we love called My Grandma's Coffee Cake. And my good friend Seth Annapol is the CFO there and has worked there for many years. And we ate this cake as kids. My parents had the cake in the house and the butter knife was just left in the bag and you just went after it every morning and grabbed another hook. It's like, I don't know how many grams of fat are in each little tiny slice.
Don't ask the question.
It's an amazing cake. It's the most incredible cake. But so we were jokingly hanging out, and I've made some tribute beers to friends and named beers after friends and stuff and for friends. And I was like, I should make a beer with the cake, man. We should do this. And like, we're dipping the cake in brown ale going, yeah, this is great. And then one day I was like, you know what? We're going to do it. We're going to brew an Exhibit A beer. We're going to call it Cake. And Kelsey's got a great idea for the label. And we've been doing it now 4 years. This year we'll brew about four times as much as we've ever brewed.
Wow.
So that's exciting. So we actually put some, it's pumpkin coffee.
Pumpkin coffee cake. Yeah.
They make many different cakes. They make a beautiful pineapple cake. They make that's great. Their blueberries, the classic walnut, cinnamon's really good.
Cinnamon walnut,
yeah.
This not only touches our hearts, it touches every white girl in America.
That's right.
Yeah, so. You should see the Brandon. I mean, it's
even better.
I got to Google
even
this
better.
Right now,
we finished the beer off with a little bit of light roast cold brew coffee too from Share Coffee Roasters. So yeah, it's got a little hint of of coffee in it as well. It was both the sweetness and
call it like a cake infused pastry beer. It's amber colored, it's like an auburn ale. It's like
that's not a stout.
So. Right. Yeah. It's very lighter. Much like a light brown ale, if you will. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah. A little bit sweet, and a little bit like nice coffee aroma. Is that the cake you looked at?
Yeah, I found it. Yep,
can't see that. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Awesome. Look at the.
Yeah, I think it's on our website right now. Still.
Yeah.
So you guys have referenced music several times now, so I got to ask both of you. Desert Island, you get one disc, one band. Who are you picking?
Oh God.
Putting you on the spot.
I thought you were going to say beer, and that was going to be easy.
No.
Yeah. We've answered that question a bunch of times.
In Sync or
can
Backstreet
it be two?
Boys?
Can it be? Oh, geez. I mean, come on. It's definitely Backstreet Boys. Come on. I'm too old for In Sync. I mean,
I'm out on both.
Yeah, totally. Can it be a double album?
Okay, we'll accept that.
Well, if it was released as a double album, maybe. Like the White Album or something.
No, it wasn't. No, I was thinking A Day at the Races and A Night at the Opera. Oh. Queen.
I thought you were going to say Frampton Comes Alive. But
that's also good.
Kelsey?
For me, right now, I think it would be the Smiths' The Queen is Dead. By the Smiths.
Amazing. I guess my real answer, just in the spirit of being on a podcast right now, is it's got to be Ragged Glory by Neil.
Ragged Glory. I don't know.
Neil Young.
Okay, so
he just pulled all his stuff off of Spotify.
Interesting. Yeah, he pulled all of his stuff off of Spotify.
Because of a podcast.
Yeah.
How bizarre was that? So I'm going to bring it back here a little bit.
I love Neil.
Hi. I got to bring it back. We got to get, I got to see how Kelsey and Matthew, how did you guys get into brewing?
Mm-hmm.
Good question.
I got into brewing as a home brewer living in Flagstaff, Arizona.
No way, Flagstaff. I am a lumberjack, by the way.
Right on. So am I. NAU, brother.
Hell yeah.
Nope. Class of 90, supposed to be 5/7. I think is nice. Where I was. Yes.
Nice. '08 for me. Yeah. It was a good time.
I lived on Cooch Drive up off of,
wow.
Do you know where that is?
Cooch Drive, but that's fantastic.
It's kind of a weird name of a street, it's up above Homebrewers Outpost, which used to be at the top of San Francisco Street.
Yeah. I do remember that place.
It's up 180 and you kind of bang a left before you get towards the mountain and it's right there. Yeah. No, I love my time in Flag. So I started homebrewing. I shopped at Homebrewers Outpost. I worked there briefly. I had a pool table and a lot of homebrew and thus a lot of friends. And they definitely, I have still friends from those days that like I've sent beers to that, I have a friend that still lives and she lives down in the valley, but I sent her some beers and we're sending beer to Arizona. Actually, ironically, they're in our footprint.
Yes.
Right now.
I wanted to talk about that before we close out on the Flagstaff conversation. I said I was a lumberjack, just so the people who don't know what Northern Arizona University is, the lumberjack is the mascot. I am not actually a lumberjack.
I was going to say
you
with your new mustache. I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Well, the mustache helps, my case. See,
but you're okay. Like you're a lumberjack, but you're okay.
Yeah, that's right. But in Flagstaff, which is a very small town, it's growing. But it's a very small town in Arizona. It is like the coolest little town. It is not like Phoenix. It's not like Tucson.
It's like Vermont. Vermont.
It's very much like small town, snowy town.
Yeah.
Arizona, believe it or not, for those of you listening. And you have to drink beer there. That is like the rule that it is a culture in Flagstaff. And I went back last year and there are like, now, I don't know when the last time you've been back was, but it's
been like 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
There's a lot more breweries there now. So it's becoming, yeah, it's becoming more of a culture. It's
awesome. When I lived there, it was Beaver Street Brewery, Flag Brew, yes, and Oak Creek Brewing had just opened.
Yep.
In Sedona. Yeah. And Mogollon had literally opened like moments before I left.
Yeah, that's right. I remember and Beaver
They're not Street. There anymore. And yeah, Beaver Street, who Gene Olmquist, who is the brewer, probably still at Beaver Street. I think he's an owner too. He started Homebrewers Outpost. He was the one who got me my first actual job in this world of beer because he hired me to work for free for free ingredients.
Wow. That's what a trade. That's fantastic.
I mean, it was either that or 7 1/4 an hour. It wasn't, or $6.50 an hour. I don't remember what actually, yes, in Flagstaff minimum wage is probably like $4.50 an hour probably. In 1995. So
probably,
yeah,
something like that.
Wasn't great.
Kelsey, what about you, buddy? How'd you get into it?
So I'm still proud of the fact that I've never brewed a drop of beer. So I made it all this way.
It's not his role. It's not his role.
Not my thing. But no, I worked for probably about 15 years as like a media producer. So I produced television commercials and corporate video and sales tools and websites and print media and things like that. And I was just kind of getting really tired of that industry and was looking at the beer industry and it's like, you know, as it was coming up in the Boston area and I'm like, these people are really cool. I really like what they're doing. Seeing what was happening, like, I'm like, these are like really talented brewers that aren't really that great at marketing and design and all of that stuff. And, so I said, I saw an opportunity for me to use my powers for good instead of evil. I got a chance to work for these two women, Kate and Suzanne, who were really pioneers in the Boston area, at least for craft beer on the retail side. They opened a store in Belmont, which is just it's right near Cambridge, just outside of Boston. And it was just all craft beer, just focused all on craft beer. And this was in 2008, I think, or 2007. And at that time, this was like revolutionary, like nobody was doing anything like this. And I was like, wow, this is what they're doing is really amazing. And I heard that they were planning to open another store. So I applied to help them open, you know, help them open that second store. So I worked there for about a year. This was a store in Winchester. And then they brought me onto the brand team and I helped them open 26 more stores nationwide. So now they have this little craft beer cellar franchise, and are really just, you know, have been spreading the gospel of, you know, of craft beer ever since. And what really brought me to them, there's a lot of stores now that still sell craft beer and do a great job at it. But what they did that was different was they really focused on the education side of it, saying with the idea that one, your staff needs to be really educated on what beer is and what makes good beer. And the more that you can educate the consumer, the better shopper they're going to be when they come into your store.
Yes.
So if the consumer knows about freshness and keeping beer cold and what's a good beer style and is the beer adhering to a style or is it not? And if it's not, is it still a quality beer? That shopper is going to be a better shopper and is going to be a better return shopper to, yes, if they understand what your concept is. So that education part was something that I really took on as my role there. I trained a lot of the new franchise owners. I helped train their staff. I put together education events put together, you know, classes and blind tasting panels and things for customers. That's really how I, you know, fell deep into the craft beer world.
Way to fall deep.
That's a great way to phrase it.
Yeah,
you kind of fall in and you want to stay there.
Yeah, you don't come back out.
Yeah, no. That's right. 100%.
Yeah, and that's how I've met and heard of Matthew and than when I heard he was opening, you know, a new concept.
I thought it was Mike. Hold on.
Well, we call him Mike. But that's where we met, and he was like, hey, I'm looking for somebody to kind of, you know, head up the front end of this, you know, and I'm like, well, you need design help, you need photography, you need web design. I know retail, I know POS systems. So I'm like, hey, I can do this, you know? So I got to help open a brewery with somebody else's money, and that was fun.
And I love that he uses that, because that's actually my line, which I mean, I don't know if that's why Kelsey said that, but I have used that line because when my first big job opening a brewery, was with someone else's money. And that was
a dream. Yeah.
Spend your own money, but build something that you love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that brewery is still successful. I obviously left that brewery a long time ago, but that part's very, there's a lot of learning to be done. And I say to anyone who's starting at their own place, like, have help, because if it's all on your shoulders, it's going to be all on your shoulders. You need to have people around you to help support that. And, you know, whether it's a staff like we have here, or, you know, partners or whatever.
But it seems really like a recurring theme, because we had Greg Cook from Stone Brewing on
a couple
of months ago. Yeah. He's a nobody in the industry. Don't pay attention to it, but
I hear like smashing beers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even, but you know, one of the funny things is like when we brought him on the show and he joined, you know, one of the first things that he said was like, look, I didn't do any of the beer. Like, I'm not the mastermind here.
He's not a brewer. Yeah.
Like, you know, he's not the brewer, but he knows, like, when he went to Berlin, he knew when he opened in San Diego, like, it was not him. He was the first person to say, like, I am not the guy that everyone seems to think I am. I just love doing this and, you know, creating, like, helping to create a great brewery, but he's not creating a great beer. He's not a brewer.
Right.
You know, but he has the help. And I think
made a lot of good decisions. Yeah. Yeah. Hired great people, got hired Mitch, who, mm-hmm. became
Damage Steel, phenomenal brewer.
Yeah, who now has New Realm, but
Berlin may not fall into that good decision camp, but you know what? They tried it. They gave it a shot.
They went for it. They went for it.
Yeah.
We were just talking about Stone beers the other day, like recently, out of the blue. So it's funny that you brought them up.
I bring them up all too frequently because I'm from San Diego, and so I just have, you know, that was my first craft beer that I grew up on.
You should have saw when Greg Cook was on. Oh my gosh. I was
fanboying.
Like, in a candy store, like, man.
Like,
it was super cute.
I probably would be too.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I've met Greg before. I certainly don't know him.
Derek's mad at me right now.
I was trying to hold on to this for you guys to tell us about it.
Let's talk about it.
Most people are listening and not watching. They wouldn't have even known. They would have had no idea that I tried this first. I could have pretended. But now the cat's out of the bag. The kitten with the ball of yarn is out of the
ball
bag.
Of yarn.
Oh, that's not what we're drinking right now. But
no, we did talk about Saturday a little bit. But I want to know, as far as flavor profile goes, what you guys think. Because unless you guys have it, explain to us what we're about to taste.
I mean, the thing that I want to just put out there about a beer like this is all about the malt, right? It's Scotch ale. People talk about hops all day. They're sexy. They're grown in a beautiful environment up in Yakima. You know, there's all sorts of great things about hops that we can talk about all day. But malt to me is far more sexy, far more interesting. Mm. It gives dynamic to the beer that no other ingredient can give. Yeah. And we are a big fan of locally sourced grains. We have a great malt house here in Massachusetts called Valley Malt that we dig very deep into their portfolio, and we've developed grains with them. We have a direct line to the farmers through them. And so we a beer like this, we capitalize on that big time. You know,
can you just tell me, like, really quickly, like, with grains, how do you vet a quality grain? Like, do you have to take it all the way through the brewing process, or is there a way to tell before you get to that point that it's a quality grain?
So the farmer works with, you know, a lab to determine if it's malt quality. And there's a pretty stringent, you know, test that can go on the grain itself, from seed to plant, to checking the soil, to the water, everything, you know, the sun, all the stuff, the farmer's hands,
the terroir,
the terroir. Yeah. Keep the lotion at a minimum. You don't want that.
Yeah.
Although I do need some lotion.
It's winter.
It's cold and dry. Here, you know,
you gotta, it's crisp. It is real crisp around here.
Hey, we live in the desert. We get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a dry heat. I've been there. It's not that bad.
How dare you? That's our, by the way, if you live in Las Vegas, that's our least favorite phrase, because it doesn't matter how humid
how
it
dry.
Is. It's 115 degrees outside.
Doesn't matter. So we, there is a pretty stringent malt quality thing that goes on. Cornell University in New York does testing on grain. There's a whole department for grain studies, and I've gotten to get to know a few of the people from there, the educators and researchers, and we're part of something called the Northeast Grain Shed Alliance, which is a group of brewers, bakers, distillers, farmers, maltsters, millers. I may have left somebody out.
Educators.
Educators, researchers. Yeah.
Is that maltster is a thing?
Maltster. Yeah, the person who makes malt. Yes.
Wow. So it's a maltster.
Yes.
That's a great title. I'm just I think it's fascinating.
Andrea Stanley, who is our maltster, and Margo, who is our maltster at Valley Malt. And Chris also does plenty of malting.
Shout out to the maltsters.
The maltsters are
very exciting.
Whenever I send an email with like a new order or a check on an order or whatever, I'm like, if I'm checking on an order, I'm like, I change my greeting on the email almost every time. And a lot of times I text them because they're also friends of mine, but it's like mighty, mighty maltster, or my maltster peeps, or my gosh, the maltsters, they're coming for you, you know, just something goofy.
All real maltsters.
But we do have a really close, you know, we could talk all day about like our suppliers, right? The people who we buy stuff from, but we do tend to have really close relationships with the people we buy things from, whether it's malt, hops, cardboard, chemicals, you know, we have relationships with all these people and the companies of which that we do business with, but there's nothing like doing business with your farmer/maltster, right? So with this particular beer, we're going to need you to come in on Saturday Scotch Ale, lovingly known as Scotch Ale.
Just Saturday.
Saturday.
Is that the acronym version of it?
Saturday Scotch Ale. There's hand smoked beechwood malt in there. There's, you know, Cara Munich. There's a kilned stewed Munich malt that gives us some crystal character. There's Munich malt, there's Vienna malt, there's Pilsner malt. And we use a lot, anytime there's something that's really a way for us to focus on the malt or focus on the grains of a beer, we definitely lean heavy on using Valley malt in those beers. Now, we also use Valley malt in all of our beers, but this particular one has a very high percentage, and that's really fun, because it gives us some freedom. It gives some creative freedom. It gives the maltsters a place to shine.
Yes.
And, you know, and in a place, in a world of hop heavy beers, as much, and we put a lot of care and character into our hoppy beers when it comes to malt as well. And I think that a lot of people it could be argued that our beers, the soul of our beer is obviously, like all beers, is malt, but our beers wouldn't taste the way they do without the grain we use, you know. So
yeah,
that was exciting.
I sometimes use the analogy of like a lot of people now understand, you know, fresh roasted coffee, you know, like the bean makes a lot of, but you know, the actual bean before it's roasted makes a lot of difference, the origin of that, but also how it's roasted and how freshly it's roasted makes a huge difference in the end product of your coffee. Grain is not that dissimilar. You know, the quality of the grain going in makes a huge difference, but then how that grain is malted, how it's been roasted or kilned, how it's treated, and how freshly you get that in before you make a beer with it makes a huge difference in the flavor profile as well. So, you know, kind of garbage in, garbage out, you know, the better product you have going into making your beer makes a huge difference in the flavor at the end.
Yeah, we've all seen the advertisements, like, you know, from the big companies talking about their the grain, you know, the you know, how the farmers like got a hoe or whatever. And it's you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Bud Light uses like the best ingredients, right? Like only the lowest first, like
they do. I mean, I know that I will say that, like, you know, Anheuser-Busch as a company does actually buy really high quality ingredients. There's no question about that. They do.
You get the scale, I guess you can. You
know, they bring in rail cars of high quality malt from the Midwest, just like I get in bags, you know.
I guess there's no accounting for taste, even if you have fresh ingredients, and that's perfectly fine.
Right. Sure.
We make a habit of throwing Anheuser-Busch under the bus as much as possible on this.
We currently are making a new beer, a lager beer called Everyday Lager, and there happens to be rice in that beer. And the rice we buy is from England. Now, I would like to get some American grown rice. The problem with rice now in the beer world for us is it's really expensive. But Anheuser-Busch kind of used it back in the day because it was cheaper. It was cheaper than barley and cheaper than wheat even. And now it's more expensive than both of them.
So is it because they drove up the price, or is there just other market forces happening?
I'm not sure, because they don't pay more for it than they do for barley. They definitely, it's
sure they have their own farms at this point.
Well, they definitely have their own farms, both hops and grain. So, it's interesting, because I was like, oh, we should get some rice going because, you know, it's reasonably priced. And then I was like, oh, no, it's like twice as expensive as barley. You know, okay. But it makes for a really cool, crispy lager, that's for sure.
I have no doubt. Yeah. So I would love to continue down this ingredients path, but we got to talk a little bit more about this fantastic beer that we're drinking right now.
Yeah, we need to know what we're tasting.
Well, I'm just going to talk about ingredients. So Kelsey should talk about flavor since he's drinking it.
And I'm still drinking it right now. Yeah.
Kelsey, I'm going to tell you what I'm experiencing right now. Mm-hmm. You can tell me how full of shit I am. So malt, I'm going to just start with that because that's what you guys just talked about for this beer. But I definitely can't. And I'll just tell you too, like, one of the beers that got me into craft beer, and this is probably kind of lame, but also it's the reality, was Killian's Irish Red. And it was like, you know, in college.
Just kidding.
It was a good one.
Totally good.
You're right. But, in college, all I was doing was playing beer pong and drinking like Natty Light or, you know, PBR or something like that. And then somehow, I don't know, I wound up with some Killian's Irish Red. And I was like, whoa, this actually has like flavor. Like it tastes like good. And I didn't know beer was supposed to taste good. I thought you were supposed to drink it to get drunk.
Yeah, it wasn't yellow.
it wasn't this yellow fizzy stuff that just kind of like made me burp a lot. And and it sort of changed my outlook. And so when I drink this, obviously it's nowhere near, there's a lot more complex flavors I think in here than you would get in like Killian's Irish Red, which also got much worse when Molson Coors bought it. I feel like, I don't know if that's completely true, but I feel like that's what happened. But I'm definitely getting a lot of the complex malty notes that, and I'm not always a malty guy. I think we talked about this before.
Yeah, you're a big IPA guy. You love your IPA.
I am the hoppy guy. You know, you guys just talked about it. That's the second. But I think I've killed all my other taste buds. So all I like are hops. But that's not totally true because I drink this and this is really, really tasty.
Yeah, this is fantastic. It goes
out. Scotch ale / wee heavy is one of my favorite styles. I pushed heavily to brew this. I'm like, we need to do a Scotch ale. And you know what I love about this is it has that little bit of that raisiny sweetness to it, but also has that rich kind of toasty brown malt character, and then we add that little touch of smoke, which adds a hint of bitterness, and like some people are like, oh, smoke, you know, it's like, oh, it's going to be like bacon or something in a glass, but we add just a tiny little bit, so it just kind of gives a little feeling of that kind of warmth, a little bit of like it's sitting by a fire, you know, like next to a fireplace, you know, this with like, you know, a bearskin rug on the floor or whatever.
The moment you said smoke, mm-hmm. I smelled the beer and I was picking that up. And here's the thing. Yeah. I'm just going to say this is like my, makes me really nervous because I think about this and I think that like you can put sort of smells or tastes mm-hmm. in someone's mind. And one of these days, I know one of the brewers or the brewery teams that join our podcast, they're going to say
oh, don't you taste that hint of cherries? And I'm going to be like, yeah, I totally taste that hint of cherries. And they're going to be like, ha ha, fuck you. That's not cherries at all. There's no fucking cherries in here, you dumbass. But anyway, that's my aside. I feel the smokiness and like I'm getting that sense. And so hopefully you're not burning me here.
Well, no, I totally feel your like bear rug and everything. Right when you talked about that, I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see Stu like naked on a bear rug. I could be perfect. That's what I do every Saturday night.
But we got the picture. I have the mental picture of Derek with his shirt off.
You know? Yeah, we've already got that. No, but this is fantastic, man. And what's the alcohol content on this?
8.4.
8.4?
Yeah,
it's gonna be. It's gonna be a good night. Yeah, it is smooth. It's very smooth. You would never know it's that high.
Yeah. We condition that beer for a good month before packaging too, so it's ready to go. You know, it's matured well. It's it cellars well too. Like we've had a couple year old kegs that have held up amazing.
When you condition for that long, that helps even out the flavors, right? So you're not getting spikes of flavor.
Yeah. It brings down the heat of the alcohol a little bit and it kind of like, I like to think that it smooths it out and kind of rounds the beer out a little bit. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do an extended conditioning in the tank of most styles, but be it lager, of course. But stronger beers like stouts and some porters and certainly like heavy beers like Scotch ales or triples and things like that. I would definitely do that with. Oh, my 12-year-old just flicked me in the head.
I just need to say something. I need to say something right now.
I need some Pepto.
Derek's getting some tummy pains. You can go lay with your child upstairs. Maybe your wife can take care of you. Just right. Derek's got like a newborn baby.
I do too, but he's like 12.
But I want to say this because one of the other important things that I think our listeners need to know, mm-hmm. because most of our listeners are probably on the West Coast, Southwest. You guys are located in the East Coast, but you guys actually ship direct to consumer in some states.
We do.
Which is mm-hmm. amazing. Which is really cool.
Oh, who is that?
Hi, we have a guest.
Is this is Noah. He's 12. The artist is upstairs. She doesn't leave her room much.
Hi, you want to join the podcast for a little bit?
Jump on.
No, he's out of here. He's like, I'm going to bed or something. I don't know where he's going. You're going to sleep.
He's gonna stream on Twitch or something. Oh, there,
yeah. Love you.
I have a 4-year-old who's already playing more Nintendo Switch than I am, and that just is a testament to me as a father. So I take full responsibility for that. But
there you go.
It is what it is. But anyway, you guys are actually distributing direct to consumer in some states that it's allowed. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I gotta give you a little frustration that Nevada's not on that list. But can you tell us?
We're bummed.
As soon as Nevada allows us to ship it in,
we were on that list.
We found a way on that list somehow. Special podcast connections. Yeah. The secret society. It's the Freemasons actually. But no, we don't need to talk more about that.
It was one of the kind of interesting developments because of the pandemic. You know, a lot of breweries were looking at like how else can we sell beer, because we lost our draft business, we lost our taproom business. What are some other avenues? And some of the states said, you know, hey, we're okay with you shipping beer direct to consumers into our state. Now wine has been doing this for a long time, and there's a lot of wineries. Sure. I always say like wine has probably like a 10-year head start on a lot of things that the beer industry does. So wine you can ship to direct to consumer in almost any state. Beer, it's still only about 6 or 8 states.
Crazy.
And so we investigated that, and a lot of them, it's a matter of getting licensed in that state, and then filling out all the paperwork and paying the fees and whatnot. But now we're legal to ship direct to consumer, and you can just go if you live in Nebraska, Virginia, Vermont, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania. Did I say Virginia? Possibly Virginia, DC. if you live in any of those states, then we can ship directly to you, and you can go on right on our website. Also Massachusetts, we're allowed to ship directly within our own state. But you can go right on our website and you can order beer, and we'll pack it up in the cool boxes that we sent the beer to you in. and get it right to your doorstep. Usually, most of it's been coming within 3 to 4 days through wow. FedEx. So, and especially during this season, you don't even have to worry about it getting too hot, because the trucks are cold and the beer gets to you generally in good shape. So
we need to start a letter writing campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am sick of not being able to order beer
yeah.
to my house
yep.
in Las Vegas, Nevada.
From anywhere.
This I mean, think about what yeah. think about what Nevada hell? Lets you do. I mean, the yeah. thing is that the state of Nevada yeah. lets you do.
But
you
Wild can't get West, beer. Man.
Really yeah, why can't I ship you some beer that you purchased legally online?
Well, this
lack if you're listening.
Well, this comes back again to the pandemic. Before, you couldn't get delivery from a liquor store or anything like that. So pandemic,
but you can now?
Yeah. Now you can. So now you can order, but you have to order from the specific place. Like, we don't have a Drizzly or any of those apps where we can, deliver. Like, you have to go directly to the source.
Yeah.
The store has to offer the delivery service.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, which I'm sure most do. Yeah, I would think.
Yep.
It's like just they got a van and they can just bring you whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, restaurants here were giving you plastic cups with a lid for drinks to go. Man,
I read about
that. That's pretty incredible. Talk about the Wild West.
That is the Wild East over there, man. That's like they reversed it on us. We thought Nevada was cool.
Yeah, my brother experimented to find out if he could do it on a bicycle, I think. And he went to a bar, got a drink to go, and then got on his bike with his drink and was like, I'm drinking a drink riding my bicycle right now. That's crazy.
Awesome. We'd get like quartz, like plastic quartz filled with margaritas and stuff and like margaritas to go. It was awesome.
Yeah, like in Louisiana, right? Don't they do daiquiris to go and shit? Like that's
I think they've always done that in New Orleans. New Orleans lets you do whatever you want. Yeah.
What's the drinking limit for driving?
I don't think it matters out there.
They don't care.
Nobody's driving.
I mean, I guess if when Uber showed up, is okay.
All right. I got to ask you guys, because I love the weird stuff, man. Like I love my super spicy beers. Like if you told me something tasted like a banana upside down cake, I would drink it. Like what kind of beer have you done or maybe are planning on doing, if you can talk about it, that is like super weird?
I mean, we've done a handful of wacky. I mean, we did a peanut butter and fluff beer. The peanut butter was such a pain to work with. And I want to start by saying that anytime we do a beer that is not traditional ingredients, we use whole ingredients. We don't use extracts. We don't use syrups. We don't use like laboratory
artificial flavors
with other natural flavors. So it's all whole fruit or all whole whatever. So we're like, let's make a peanut butter beer. So we had to buy like buckets full of peanut butter.
Well, hell yeah.
Mind you, Jeff? Nut Jeff? Oil. No, it was actually Teddy's. Like we went big. Like we bought the good stuff.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And but the nut oil, like nut fat, is bad for beer. So kills the head, kills the head retention.
Yes.
We learned some lessons. It tasted awesome while it lasted. But we've done some other things. We've done some cool, well fruited like IPAs. We've done
we did a peppermint glitter porter.
Peppermint glitter porter.
What was it? Why glitter? What was the glitter?
At one point, Brewer Supply Group, which is a big national, actually now North American, they have a place in Canada too. So Brewer Supply Group, they sell us hops, malt, cleaning supplies, whatever, everything, yeast. They had this edible glitter at one point that they were like, this is the next thing. Like, this is what people are going to be doing. And so,
let's do it. I think strippers use it a lot.
Well, coming from Las Vegas, you may be aware. So this is not that kind of glitter. And this is not that kind of show, mister.
You can tell your wife you just had a beer.
My stepbrother has a funny story like that. No, but so it's this edible glitter. It actually worked really well in dark beers, because if you think about the glitter, it's like sparkly and silvery. So it looked great in porter. So we did this peppermint glitter porter. And actually what's funny is I called them recently because we're doing some fun little experiments in the brewery, and I was like, oh, maybe we should bring in some more glitter, and they don't sell it anymore. So my guess is that it either didn't work or they found out something that we don't want to be using it is metal after all. I mean, I don't know exactly what the deal is, but I do know that it is no longer available through Brewer Supply Group. I'm pretty sure it just didn't work.
Microplastics are bad. Think about it. Metal glitter. Edible, quote unquote.
Edible glitter.
Edible metal.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
I do have to I do have to urinate. I'm sorry, guys.
Take a quick pause. So bad. Yeah.
Okay. And that'll leave us to our sponsor.
Okay. We're gonna take a quick break for our
who's our sponsor? Is it Joe Rogan or Neil Young?
Actually, you know what? It's Pepto Bismol.
Is that true?
It's not
makers
really
of edible glitter.
We're courting Pepto-Bismol by making fake commercials for them until we get a season.
Nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea. Those are all things you might suffer from after a long night of drinking, like Derek, every other day. But they also happen to be the same things that Pepto cures. So, ladies and gentlemen, whether Pepto-Bismol happens to actually be a sponsor of this show or not, psst, they're not, get Pepto and fix your hangover. Figure it out. Pepto-Bismol, curing hangover since 1234. If I was sick from a hangover or really anything, where I was throwing up or, coming out the other end perchance, the last thing that I would want to take is a pink, thick beverage to help cure me. And yet, that's what Pepto does. Pepto does not give a shit about your expectations. They only care about results, and that's why we trust Pepto. They don't sponsor the show yet, but they will. Pepto-Bismol, making disgusting beverages since 1532.
And we're back. Thank you, Pepto, for that amazing commercial. You guys treat us too well.
You do. Way too well.
And by the way, Pepto is not even really a sponsor, but they will be. 2023. We're waiting for it. 2023.
We're waiting.
Thanks, Pepto. So we're back. We're back. And we are actually, you know what? I think now
we got a lot of glasses. What's happening?
We got stuff going. I don't know what you did. I think you grabbed my old beer from over there.
I did. Right here? Is that this one?
I think it might be that one.
We'll finish it all.
Yeah, we'll be. Anyway, so this Derek's tea, I could not wait for, but he feels much better now. He's back. This is a good segue into a couple of different things. First, we need to know your guys' fears.
Ooh,
yes.
This is where we get into the crux of the show, because really what the show is about is the fact that we're all afraid of something, and beer is what helps us through it.
Not being able to pee.
No Derek's now.
Kelsey, why don't you tell us your biggest fear first?
Yeah, I had to think about this one because I have a lot of like little fears. You know, I'm not scared of heights, but I'm scared of falling. You know, it's I don't mind being like on a top of a giant building, and I'll go up to the railing to the edge of the building and I can look over and I'm totally cool with that. But if there's no railing, then no. You know, I'm not going near there.
Totally with you.
But I had to think,
skydiving is out of the question.
Well, that's just—it's like literally.
No, I would skydive.
There's no railing.
There's no railing.
He's got a parachute, you know.
So
maybe he might have a parachute.
It's a controlled fall, you know. Well, I would be okay with that.
Maybe that's our next staff trip.
I would totally do it. Yeah.
I'm
glad we could help lead you guys to your next idea.
But I'm like, I would fear drowning, but I'm not scared of swimming or swimming underwater, like being on a boat or anything like that. There's just like the act of drowning,
which I'm afraid of dying.
Yeah,
that's fair.
So I had to putting all of this together. I think what I'm scared of most is quicksand, because you would drown in quicksand. And you would die alone without any help because nobody is there to pull you out of it. So growing up, I saw, you know, there was, I figured quicksand was going to be a much bigger danger, you know, when I grew up.
So glad you said that, because I think we all grew up playing Mario and we all grew up watching, you know, Prince of Tides.
And
like the Star Trek episodes where they get caught in quicksand and old westerns, you know, like they're always just walking quicksand down the road and suddenly there's some quicksand and like nobody's there to pull them out. You know, they had to lasso the rope. And
why is there always quicksand around in the 80s and 90s? Yeah. There was just like, that was like
very common.
That was a pandemic.
I don't think I've run across quicksand in my life. I guess if I would have, I wouldn't be here, but that's a valid
fear.
But yeah, that you know, dying by quicksand would be the worst, I think.
So you said because you die alone and you drown.
Die alone because there's nobody to help you to pull you out. And it was the act of drowning, which is a slow death.
Sand going down your mouth.
Well, it's not drowning. And
it's essentially like being buried alive.
Yeah.
You know,
which is definitely a terrible fear.
If you don't
have that fear, I think you're weird.
Yeah, so quicksand, it combines a lot of my fears into one. So.
Yeah, you got a little claustrophobia. Yep. You got a little bit of dying alone.
Yep.
Oh, we had dying alone on here before.
Right? Feeling helpless.
So. I don't know if we have.
We had honest with you, like kind of close to dying
alone. Yeah, you hit a lot of points. Yeah. I never thought of quicksand ever.
Who was just on
quicksand's a good one.
Claustrophobia. Ooh. Dang it, Kelsey, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight, man.
Luckily, not much sand in Massachusetts. So
not quicksand.
Las Vegas, not the same thing.
where is all this quicksand? We need to look this up because maybe somewhere in the world this is really
It's in bad. Henderson. I think it's in Henderson.
Thank God we're not there. We're on the cusp.
We're on the other side of the freeway.
We're just on the
road. I don't know if you have any fans in Henderson. I respect you, but come on. Oh,
they're
going to be testing the waters tonight. It's going to be great. Now, quicksand is. And by the way, do you guys happen to watch the show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yes, I have.
They just had an episode about with quicksand when they went to visit Ireland.
Oh,
so I'm wondering if Ireland maybe has.
Must be all there.
If that's where all the quicksand is.
Yeah. All the directors of those movies and TV shows and the video. Well, you know, Mario came out of Japan. Maybe there's a lot of quicksand in Japan.
There could be, yeah.
You know, like, I don't know.
I recently did see some random YouTube videos about how to get out of quicksand.
You got to stay still.
Well, so, Kelsey needs to watch those. So
staying still keeps you from, because if you struggle, then you fall quicker.
You're going down. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still, you fall slower, but you're still falling.
So there's like, you have to go a certain way. And then like, there was a lot involved that I don't think I remember passing quicksand.
You didn't learn the
lesson. There's no way
out. Falling it in the first place. I don't know. Does it look like normal ground?
It looks like normal sand. That's the thing. Yeah. You don't know.
Mm-hmm. You never know.
It could be your next step.
It's not a lot of sand.
That's why I hate the beach too.
I'm also
walking down the damn beach in San Diego. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you just die. Like dead.
Guess what we're doing, Kelsey? We're going to be doing a new thing coming up to where we go to all the people we've had on the podcast and their fears, and we're going to help them with their fears. So we're going to bring quicksand out to you and get you in it, and then you're gonna have to get out.
Conquer it.
Right.
It's going to be like a kiddie pool filled with sand and water.
Yeah, man.
I'm into it. And
worst case scenario, you don't die alone because we'll all just watch you die.
Yeah,
we'll be there with you as you die.
He'll be there.
I'll just be waving as I'm dying.
At least you're here with me.
All right. I'm thankful to have you all with me here as I'm dying.
We're happy to support this.
And we'll be
conquered one of my many fears of dying.
And that'll be a Friday, and we'll be drinking Saturday. So you can wave goodbye to working on Saturday.
We also have a beer called Sunday Paper, so we've got the weekend covered.
We're saying we need a Friday. We need a Friday beer.
Well, at least we'll celebrate you all.
Here, well, I am not afraid of quicksand. I laugh at quicksand.
Laugh in the face.
I laugh in Kelsey's face as he's in quicksand.
That's why we work together. Opposites attract and all that.
Yeah. No, I probably am also afraid of quicksand. I also have a bunch of little fears. Like, you know, I have kids and you guys sound like you have kids. So like, forget it. That's the biggest one. Something happening to them is like, I can't even think about it.
I like them.
Yeah. I like them. most of the time.
Most of the time. Yes.
But one totally of my biggest fears growing up was bridges. And I was super afraid of bridges. My brother told me they moved and that sometimes they'd collapse and shit. And so I was afraid of the bridge going into New York. I was afraid to there was a real big, long bridge going over the Cape or going into Cape Cod. That's a pretty big bridge. So I was like, this is really scary. But I'm no longer scared of that. And in fact, my brother will often be like, oh, we're on a bridge. Are you going to freak out? I'm like, dude, I'm fine. I'm like not afraid of bridges anymore. But I do live in a very old house. Our house was built in 1830. It's a schoolhouse.
In New England.
In New England.
Which is where every haunting begins.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the Bonds Village schoolhouse, and it is, you know, pleasant and beautiful inside, but it is not, it is haunted.
Oh, and really?
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you got to tell us?
Yeah.
What are you seeing? What are you hearing?
Yeah.
Well, every few months we smell Pall Malls, and you know, that's my wife's grandmother.
Oh.
She smoked cigarettes in this house, like all of them. That's why there's no cigarettes left in the world. She smoked them all.
And they're all gone.
Yeah.
Sorry, kids.
And every once in a while, my
wife will say, Graham, come on. You can't smoke in the house anymore. You know, and she's been gone many years, but she's here. Mm. She's friendly. And we have friendly ghosts here. And that's actually not my fear. But I wanted to give a sort of, you know, preface to my fear, which is that I live in a haunted house.
Well, we enjoy that very much.
One of my big, and we also, there's a little girl that is here too that we don't talk much about, but she's
singing lullabies as she's walking down the hallway.
It's an old schoolhouse, so we aren't sure what happened here, but
happened. You know.
Yeah. And
don't give her a name. I hear if you give them a name, then it just like
I don't know. My wife's over there in the kitchen. I don't know if there's if she has a name. I don't think she
don't
does.
Don't do it.
But
I wouldn't.
Don't do that. Okay. You seem afraid.
Yeah.
But actually, my biggest, one of my fears, oddly, is in the dark, being alone. I always feel like someone is there.
Well, you might and be right. You might be right. Based
I think
on that.
In this case, I am actually right. And mind you, I'm a brewer. I get up at even when I'm not brewing, I'm up basically at 4 a.m. every day. So I always am in the dark when I get up. It's pitch black in my house and I do not feel like I'm alone awake. I feel like I'm not the only one awake. I feel like there's someone else there.
Oh, wow.
And I do. And you're getting chills. I do sometimes.
The dark.
I do. And I have to walk around in the dark, which I'm barely good at walking around in the light. You know, I'm bumping into shit. I'm like, but I do have that fear of I'm not alone in a dark room.
Well, okay. And when you first wake up, by the way, whether it's like in the middle of the night on accident or just when you wake up in the morning, your brain's not all the way there. I mean, at least for me, I don't know about you guys, but like
drink coffee. I wake up. I'm as good as I'm ever going to be.
I am like, dude,
wow. I'm like immediate energy when I wake up.
I don't really like you all of a sudden.
It's nobody does. You should hang with my wife.
She's like you have that fugue state, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Wake up and like I'm a zombie.
You know, I'm not a zombie at all. I'm a zombie if I go back to sleep and try to wake up a few hours later, then I'm a mess. But the first wake up, I'm golden. The other, just a real quick, I want to touch on that. It's not just the being alone in the dark that I feel like someone's there. I do believe someone is there. So oftentimes I will like turn on my light and I'm like flashing my phone around trying to see what's going on. The other fear is swimming pools and alligators. That's a big one.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah.
Separately alligators in swimming pools.
alligators in swimming pools. Yeah. And I live in New England, but Florida. I lived in Florida as a kid, and they would show up all the time in the swimming pools. And so I don't like to swim in the. I go swimming at night with my son. Our neighbor has a pool. We just we just break in and use his pool. They allow us to. Just to be clear. But we do midnight swims, and I do a double check, make sure there's no bears or whatever else going on.
Alligators.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Those New England alligators are brutal.
They're vicious.
So tell me this then. Let's say you're in the ocean, right, and you're underwater, and it's dark. You know, you can see a little bit, but then it gets dark in the ocean. Does that make you scared?
I'm very scared. Yeah. Okay. And that's like the New England
of all of them. Yeah.
Well, it's Jaws. I mean, you know, we all grew up in New England. I went to the beach on the vineyard where that shit was filmed, you know, like at night. And that is scary. There's a water thing for sure, because I'm in it. I love swimming in the ocean at night. I've done it many times. In fact, I lived literally a 2-minute walk to the beach when I lived on Martha's Vineyard. So I
adrenaline up.
Yeah. So, I guess I like fear a little bit.
Like all of the ocean here is murky. Like there's
you can't see it.
Yeah. So if you guys went to walk on, you know, went to the beach together, you know, and Kelsey falls into a quicksand pit, and then you're swimming out in the ocean, and an alligator shows up.
The riptide would pull Matthew into the ocean.
Yeah, it pulls Matthew into the ocean. There's a rip. It's dark. It's night, and an alligator.
There's an alligator.
In New England somehow, you know, like that would be your combination of nightmares.
Ultimate fear. Ultimate fear.
That? Hopefully, the ghost will lend me a hand and pull me out of the quicksand.
Yeah, you got the nice ghost, and it should be fun. Yeah.
What beer are we drinking? Sierra Nevada Pale Ales? Are we drinking the desert island beer?
Now, here's a question: out of both of your fears, do you remember anything that maybe caused the fear? Like, is there any kind of memory that maybe made you, oh God, I'm afraid of the dark, or I'm afraid of, you know, being alone in quicksand?
For me, I think it was my brother. He fucking tortured me. He told me shit was scary. He explained it. Why he'd turn the lights off, scare me. He'd, you know, do whatever the hell he wanted to try to scare me. I blame him. I blame Jason.
And I watched a lot of,
we're having next. Oh, yeah. I just want to make sure we already talked about this, but did we talk about it like in
full? We didn't talk about the Kolsch. We
talked about it because they were having it. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just want to.
No. You know, yeah, Kelsey, where did this come from?
Mine came from watching a lot of like creature feature movies on TV 38, like Saturday afternoon, you know, like on the UHF channel. And that's like where I watched like The Birds for the first time.
Scary.
And I remember like I was like 12 years old the first time I saw that movie. And
are birds robots, by the way? Are birds robots?
No. Not in that movie. Well they were in that movie.
No. Have you heard that theory though? I'm just
Birds are robots.
Yeah. There's a group out there that thinks that birds are robots.
I know they're dinosaurs. But
they think that birds are actually spying on mankind. They're government drones.
Oh,
I am not one of those people. I'm just saying that to clarify.
I can see that.
Look it up. It's fantastic.
But yeah, I'm hyper suspicious of birds.
Now even more.
But
so.
Like a lot of the, like I saw Soylent Green when I was like 14. You know, and. You know, I watched like all of these horror movies from like the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and then I would just like absorb all of it, and so I think that's where my fears came from. And watching a lot of early television, especially in like the 60s and 70s, I was born in the 70s, but I watched a lot of old TV and like a lot of those old westerns and Star Trek and all that. Like quicksand was a big thing. You know, quicksand and, so they were all getting trapped in it and couldn't get themselves out. And so I think that's where like a lot of that kind of residual fear came from. The movie The Birds still freaks me out. And whenever I see like a lot of crows gathering in a tree or like seagull, like we got a lot of seagulls around here. So seeing a lot of the seagulls flying around, I'm like, that's a little weird, but are they going to revolt and attack everybody?
Whenever I think of the movie Birds, and sorry to interrupt again, I just think it's the first thing that comes to my mind, and maybe, I don't know, maybe this is just me. I always wonder how many birds I think I can take out before they take me down. And I think I could take out at least 50 or 60 birds. What do you have on you? What
just,
do you do?
Just swinging, man.
Really?
Yeah.
They're birds, dude.
Wow, dude. Their tensile strength of their neck is nothing. Like, you just, you know, you just, you snap.
But you got the claws and the beaks. Yeah, yeah, so like, claws and beaks. Like, I don't know. If they're raking,
you'll be bloody. You'll be
like bloody. 8 ounces. Yeah, you'll be bloody. Yeah. There will be blood.
There will be blood.
They always go for the eyes first. So figure, like, how many of those can you take out blind?
Yeah, well, that's true. And I think I can keep taking them out depending on how thick the swarm is. You know, if you're swinging and it's a thick swarm, you can take a few out every swing.
Mm-hmm. 11.
Oh, you think 11 for you?
For you.
For 11. You. No, I'm 50. I'm 50. Oh my God. Easily 50.
That's a lot.
I can take out 50. How is that? They weigh 8 ounces a piece, man. You get four at you, getting at you, and then you're looking down trying to get rid of the other ones, and the other ones are coming at
you. There's, you like, pile them up. You stack them up, then you get a shield. Okay.
But their bones are really flexible. So they can take an impact. Yeah,
this is the wackiest conversation. Why? I just want to know if anyone's gonna like report us to PETA for your violence against birds.
Guess what your next beer is, for clarification.
Violence against birds.
I haven't killed 50 birds. I could kill 50 birds. That's all I'm saying.
If I was being swarmed.
Yeah.
This is all defensive. Okay, it's all defense.
The next beer is the swarm, and half the proceeds go to PETA.
Boom.
Swarm.
Throw a beer in a bird's face.
Pretty good name.
So, Stu, we're going to come to you next week with 3,000 birds. We're going to attack you and see how many you can take out.
All right. Challenge accepted. Those are some good beers, though, guys. Like the quicksand, we've never heard.
Here's another guest. Sophie.
Sophie, hi.
Is that? But that's not the cat from...
That's not Toby.
This is Sophie. Ow, her nails are very sharp.
Yeah. I have Jensen over here. He's like ready for dinner.
So. Oh, there we go. Yeah, he's waiting. He's like, it's time.
Yeah,
he's ready.
That's awesome.
So you're drinking Kolsch. I want to talk about the Kolsch.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Yes.
Tell us about the name, all that stuff, and we'll
So, you know, a lot of people say, you know, Exhibit A, they think of, you know, we're lawyers or whatever, but there is some, we put a little fun in our names, and the reference Goody Two Shoes started as this kind of nod to innocence. And for me, it was like the beer itself, the style Kolsch, is a fairly innocent style. It's kept in its own little world in Germany. It's meant to be there. It's a story about a culture. And, you know, us Americans, we kind of just bastardize everything. So why not take that style and make it here in Framingham and, you know, make our own version of it. But what I really set out to do is create an authentic tribute. You know, this is meant to be our version of what can really be Kolsch, what Kolsch can really be. We take it very seriously. We use proper yeast. We use proper processes and long conditioning times, cool temperatures for fermentation, and, you know, obviously all the highest quality ingredients and traditional ingredients, is in addition to a couple of our little local choices of from Valley Malt, you know. So we put in our own little thing, but the thing that I love about this beer is that it's a brewer's beer. So when brewers come to visit us, they're like, I see your list, just give me the Kolsch.
That's the one they want. They want the brewer.
They want the Kolsch.
Know how to make beer. This is the beer they want from you.
Yeah, big time. And so. And they come back for it. You know, that's the real beauty for us, is that, you know, it's been rated very high by Beer Advocate. It's been in Wine Enthusiast magazine as one of the top beers of the year. And we've gotten like all these cool industry accolades, and it's not really a consumer's beer, which is kind of funny. Like not to say that it isn't, because it's a beautiful beer that everyone, I think, it's kind of got a real easy drinking kind of approach. So anyone could.
It's not our highest rated on Untappd.
Yeah, it's not our highest rated. It's probably one of our lower rated beers on Untappd. Mm-hmm. But it gets a 99 on, you know, whatever on, well, it got a 96 on Wine Enthusiast, which is like an unbelievably great rating.
Yeah.
And so.
And a 100 by the Bros on Beer Advocate.
Yeah. So they gave it a 100 and wrote a really nice piece about the beer. And we've been, and it's been, you know, it's been brought up a lot as far as like I said, when brewers come to visit, they ask for the Kolsch. They don't have any, they have interest in our other beers, but that's the beer they want to make sure they get a chance to taste. And, and it's also our brewer's beers. Like it, our staff, that's what we drink. You know, it's the one we go to.
And I think you guys,
the shift beer.
You guys said that this is also won awards, right?
It's gotten some awards. It received, I think, a couple medals here and there. I try not to keep.
Well, I got a silver medal at a Greater National Beer Festival, but then it's got the
number 12.
It's the highest rate.
Yeah,
the highest rated beer on it's the highest rated Kolsch on Wine Enthusiast.
That's
and then it's got the top. Was like top 50 beers, the number 12 on top 50 beers of 2021.
We got a cheers to that. That's huge.
Cheers, guys. Cheers. Well done. Cheers. Yeah, this is absolutely a very delicious beer and a style that I agree. I mean, I wouldn't normally necessarily drink. You know, I don't always choose the Kolsch. I am a consumer. And, you know, as Derek said, I'm an IPA guy. I like the hops.
Sure.
But this is a very tasty beer. This is, I mean, it goes down very smooth.
Very easy drinking.
Am I tasting any, I don't know, and this might just be me being crazy, little clove or fruit or anything like that? Or is it
clove. I mean, your palate may be like Saturdayed up. But I think the fruit thing, like that, you know, there is some, you know, the hops we use are Tettnang hops. They're very earthy. And when they're, and so they're very different from like what you get out of like a Mosaic or, you know, a hop that's in an IPA typically.
Yeah.
But there is,
there's like a little note of lemon.
Very subtle. Grassiness, I mean, very subtle, very subtle, but I mean, just very smooth, very easy drinking, very, very tasty. I mean, honestly, like this is probably the, I think Wine Enthusiast got it right. This is the tastiest Kolsch I think I've ever had.
The thing is with every one of your beers, which is kind of what we look at too, with like the, obviously anywhere we go to drink it, how do I even explain it? It tastes just, it's smooth. There's no overwhelming.
Yeah.
There's too much of something or not enough of something. It watered down.
Yeah. Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
well, you saw our logo, right?
Too much.
Yeah. You saw our logo. Where is it?
There it is. The scales.
Balance.
It's all about balance. You're talking about balance, you know?
And I don't care if you're like if you're brand new to beer, if you're, you know, been drinking beer forever, you notice that right away. Like this is perfect.
Yeah. You get, I mean, I went on a beer tour in Colorado about a year and a half ago and we went to breweries of all sizes. We didn't go to Coors cause I just had no desire to go there, but we went to all different kinds and there were some very small breweries who made some really good stuff. But there were also some small breweries who were clearly trying to make a name for themselves by trying to do too much in certain things.
It happens.
They were trying to do some weird flavors. They were trying to do some, you know, things that really, like, I mean, it just left a bad taste in my mouth. And I won't name names because, like, I have no desire to do it. They'll learn, hopefully, and they'll get better. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the stuff that you guys are putting out, everything is smooth. Everything is delicious.
Yeah.
And I have thoroughly enjoyed it. And I haven't even tried all of the different beers that you guys have sent over.
We've tried, what, three of them?
That's it.
Did we send them Hairraiser?
Yep. Yeah, I sent
Hairraiser.
Yeah, we have the five cores.
One later.
Yeah. I thought the five cores plus Saturday. So you should have like Goody Two Shoes, Cat's Meow. Cat's Meow is like our number one seller. That's our hazy, you know, hazy New England style IPA.
Yep.
Just a kit and Hairraiser is the double IPA. That one's got a really nice punch at 8%. And then Briefcase Porter, which is one we love to talk about as well. And then Saturday.
It's a really great lineup. I mean, and that was what I was impressed about too, because, you know, of everything that I've tasted so far, there are multiple different styles and you guys are doing well with a lot of different styles because a lot of breweries will be very good at one style, but to be able to bring it to life in different ways, really, really great.
That's awesome. One of my favorite stories with the Kolsch is when we we hosted the Mass Brewers Guild like quarterly meeting at our brewery. You know, one of the things is like we donate all the beer, so it's free beer, you know, for all the breweries who come and hang out and their staff and everything. So we're just like we're ringing everything up just so we know what the total is. We're, you know, serving free beer. 98% of everything we poured that day was Kolsch.
Nice.
And then there was like the rest was just like a few IPAs and some of the Imperial style. Like people want to try something different, but everyone's like, I got to try the Kolsch. I want the Kolsch. That's all I want to drink. And it's funny. It was all the other breweries.
Yeah. Yeah. And if that was consumers, they'd be like, what's the strongest beer you have if it's free?
That's
like,
right,
they'd
right.
be drinking yeah. the strong ones.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get yeah. blacked out in two beers. Yeah. What do you got for me?
Give
me
the- I just yeah. want to say, I can't attest to this. I don't know the facts of this story that he's telling because I was on vacation in Mexico.
Yeah.
And nice. I was not at that nice. Meeting. So. Yeah.
What was your go-to beer in Mexico? What did you drink when you were in Mexico?
We drank all the Tecate and then they ran out of Tecate. They ran out of Tecate. Like we drank it all literally, and it wasn't in an all-inclusive resort, so they ended up, you know, we were drinking Modelos and, you know, Especial, and it was really good. I drank mostly canned beer as well as there, just because the draft beer just wasn't quite there, you know.
Yeah.
But we went to a little brew pub that had like their own beers, and one was like a diacetyl bomb, the other one was a sulfur bomb. It's like they were struggling.
They're trying.
Yeah, oh, they were trying man. Real hard.
Yeah, yep. It's tough to find some good craft beer down there. I will
yeah,
say.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
That I've but, seen. But Tecate is awesome.
Tecate is fun.
It's a smooth. I worked construction in college and during summertime. I did siding on houses. Believe it or not. This mustache doesn't come without merit. Okay. I've earned this bad boy. And every day, and this is before I was 21. So, you know, I am literally putting myself on blast, but you know, you get home from a long day of construction, drink a couple of Tecates. It was there awesome.
Yeah.
We
make a corn lager. That's a Mexican style corn lager called Right to Farm. Oh. We brew it in April for like a May, June, July.
Good kind summertime of beer.
Yeah, and it's one that it's 100% locally sourced grains. It's kind of a cool beer in that way because it's a farm beer, you know, corn grown here in Massachusetts, and so but it is like a Mexican style corn lager. It is what you expect those beers to be like, you know.
So yeah,
kind of fun.
It's cool like using like the local corn because it actually exhibits like real corn flavor.
Yeah,
but you actually can taste a little bit of the corn in it. Whereas like a Tecate or like an Especial, you're like, I don't know if I can pick up the corn in that beer because it's just like kind of an adjunct. But when you're using real high quality ingredients and high quality corn, fresh. It's like, oh yeah, you actually get, yeah, it's fresh too. So you get like a that nice little hint of corn in it. So
it's kind of
really nice.
Now I have two quick questions for you based on that is, so we need to know where kind of exhibit A came from. So we can put that in, we'll throw that in the front, like kind of where the name came from.
Right? Name.
So the name, it started out as I was having a meeting with Sean and my partner and all this. And he said to me, he said, you know, I've got a name. I know that you have an idea for like a logo, which was these scales that were different scales than we have now, but I had this idea for the scales. My wife's a Libra. I thought the scales would be cool.
Same.
And nice. And then he said, exhibit, like you're on display, you know? Mm-hmm. And we were kind of brainstorming around that. And I didn't love it because I thought like, it just wasn't complete. And then he had already formed this LLC or not LLC, but the corporation, mm-hmm. Exhibit A Brewing Company. So we were like, yeah, that's it. Oh, right. That's it. And so it was kind of just, he went for it. And it was based on this idea of being on display, being telling stories. And like, you know, we like to say that every story ends with exhibit A, you know,
begins with exhibit A.
I mean, every story begins with exhibit A. So like, there is this kind of multifaceted reasoning behind it. And in addition to being kind of plucked from thin air based on this idea that like, as a brewer, I'm the fish in the fishbowl and I am very much a presentation in my own way, you know? So
no,
that's kind of where it came from.
Yeah, that's cool. It's got a lot of different meanings. It's got, I mean, you can take it how it is. Like everybody
else. Well, even if we were talking about like beer labels earlier, like even if you look at like your placement on a shelf or a refrigerator in a liquor store, that's an exhibit. You know, that's your art exhibit right there. Yes. I'm not having my labels shown in a gallery, you know, in Boston somewhere. My gallery is every freaking liquor store, you know.
Yeah.
That's showing my art. You know?
1,500 of them.
Yeah, 1,500 liquor stores, you know, in the refrigerator. That's my art. That's my gallery. That's my exhibit.
Well, now, have you guys considered at all using some of your can art as like NFTs? Have you dabbled at all in that game?
That's Kelsey's department.
Yeah.
Hey, they're selling for millions of dollars, man. I'm just saying. Let me.
Okay, I need to figure it out. So, like, I could probably make them. I don't know how to sell them. So
I think my sister might be able to help us because she is like selling that shit right now and doing all sorts of crypto.
Yeah,
she's making money. She's making money with Finnair. I don't know what the hell.
I'm still figuring out what Bitcoin is. If I can
even Bitcoin doesn't know what Bitcoin is.
Right. It's funny you say the art though, because we did have a guy on and he called beer liquid art, which is really cool, right?
Like it is. One of the first beer festivals that Beer Advocate did in Massachusetts was called The Art of Beer.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it was one of the early festivals in like 2001 or something. And it was pretty
cool. Yeah, and it's very much might have been personal the 90s. Expression.
Might have been the 90s. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
it's a culture. It's a full culture.
Now this is another quick thing just to touch on so we can put it in the edit. You know, just because that's where my mind's at, right?
He's already thinking. He's already thinking how it all comes together.
Is I know you guys have a big kind of brand. We've kind of touched on it, but we haven't really talked about it. Is you guys have this whole farm to beer kind of mentality, right? Mm-hmm. So can you explain that to me?
Yeah, the Northeast Grain Shed Alliance was formed two or three years ago. There's now many members. I don't even know how many members there are, but it ranges from bakeries, breweries, distilleries, and millers. And then, of course, the grain farmers and the researchers and the educators and retailers that support this initiative. And we've created a project called the Square Foot Project. And the Square Foot Project on, I think it's April 2nd, there's going to be Square Foot Saturday of 2022. And that is a day for us to drink beer with locally sourced grains, right? Ooh. So this can of beer, call it kitten, call it shoes, whatever you want, ranges, a pint of beer will range anywhere between 1 and 6 square feet of grain. Yeah, like of farmland that you grow the grain on, right? So you've got one to six square feet. So figure on average 3 to 4 square feet of farmland to create this can of beer. If that's locally sourced grain, that's a lot of farmland here in Massachusetts or New York or Maine or, you know, Connecticut or wherever you're growing. So we took it upon ourselves to kind of be able to measure that and talk about it and say that this case of beer is 50 square feet of grain of farmland. This pallet of grain is 2¾ acres of farmland. This year usage is 50 acres or 100 acres or whatever it is. So we happen to use about 100,000 pounds of grain from local farms this year in 2021. Our goal was 75,000 pounds. So the fact that we used 100 was like unbelievable. And what it says to us every day is that the supply chain, who grows our stuff, who processes our stuff matters. It matters to us as users. It matters to us as business operators, and it matters to us as drinkers. And so for me, I see it as a massive value to our beer. I think it's a huge opportunity for us to support local farms, local processors, local truck drivers, because the grain isn't coming from the Midwest. It's coming from New York, you know, and it's coming from Massachusetts. I happen to also be really good friends with our local maltsters we talked about earlier, Andrea and Chris, and their head maltster Margo.
Maltsters.
Yeah, they're you know, she used to deliver grain to my house. Now we get 2 to 3 pallets at a time, so it's a little heavy to bring in the van again. But you know, and they've grown while we've grown, and they supply a lot of breweries and distilleries with products. for making beers and spirits. So it's I think it's just a win-win. You know, we talk a lot about how the supply chain is fractured in our meetings, because, you know, what used to take me, you know, 6 weeks to get now takes 15.
Wow.
You know, and like, call me
and
like,
that's locally, you know, or regionally.
No, I'm saying like, I'm ordering something from like Europe or something. Sure, and I'm okay. Like, gotcha, we also use grains from Europe. So, yeah. So I'm not just saying I'm only using locally sourced grains. We're not quite there, but like the grains we get from Europe, we actually have a trailer showing up tomorrow. I ordered that trailer in the end of August.
Wow.
So
2021. Yeah.
Right. I ordered grain last week from Valley Mall. It'll be here on Wednesday.
Dang.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. And they're making it to order.
This local sourcing, yeah, is much.
We want to support it because we think that it is absolutely the future, because there is no way that we can sustainably keep getting stuff from Europe and have it still be cost effective.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Think about like the freight alone is making it very difficult.
Carbon footprint too,
and the environmental impact for sure, and that's a huge part of it. And you know, why get grain
powered drones just going back and forth from Europe to Boston every like 2 hours
with pallets? Somehow these drones can carry pallets.
We're not talking about those 2-pound drones. Yeah, we're talking about the big boys, the ones in the military.
That's the Amazon front drones.
And speaking about that, like, you know, the supply chain is fractured. Like, you know, my Prime order didn't get here today. I mean, it'll be here tomorrow, and I ordered it this afternoon.
Amazon's not on time. Here today. Yeah. If Amazon's not on time, you know something's fucked up.
Yeah, there's something missed.
No, it's a problem.
That's totally true.
But we do care about that stuff, and I'm super proud of the committees that we've created and the group of people that we've put together. We're doing a collaboration beer. I guess this is technically maybe the first announcement. We haven't told anyone about it, but we are doing a collaboration beer. At a friend's brewery in New York, where it's a square foot beer. It's like 100% New York grown grains malted with at Hudson Valley Malt and also Valley Malt. And so we're getting some fun brewers together. We're going to brew that beer February 17th and release it sometime 6 to 8 weeks later for Square Foot Saturday.
Can you name any breweries, or are you keeping this kind of like on the down low for right now?
I don't know if I'm going to name any breweries. I think I'll
have that on the down low. That's a mystery. All right.
I mean, I could name them, but I think there's a few that I don't want to miss, and I don't remember everybody else.
Yeah, like multiple that we're talking about.
There's five breweries, I think.
Whoa, maybe. Okay. A 5-beer collaboration.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
and then we're going to brew it. We're going to keep brewing maybe a variation of that beer at all of our breweries throughout the next, you know, throughout the year. So
the question then is for you guys, as we kind of bring the show to a close, will people be able to order those beers also in your direct consumer fulfillment?
Once we brew the one at our brewery, yes. But awesome. Not the one that's brewed at the brewery.
gotcha.
Because of distribution, logistics, and all that.
Yeah. Although they may sell direct, although that brewery, I know it's like kind of like a go to their brewery to pick up the beer kind of place. You know, so they sell most of their beer from their brewery. I don't think they do mail order brewery.
Okay. Well, when you guys have that ready, remind us again which states you can send beer to.
Virginia.
This is important. And
Nebraska.
I'm going to add Nevada to the list soon.
Virginia, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, District of Columbia, New Hampshire, Vermont, and I believe that's it.
And Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
And also, in addition to those markets, we also sell beer in California and Arizona.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I saw that Japan.
And Japan. And
wait, if you look, skipped over Nevada and you went to Japan.
Skip over. Yes.
Arizona. Let's go.
We have a lot of fans in Japan. I mean, look at our Instagram. Like every other post is someone in Japan checking our beer in. So
that's wild.
Yeah.
We're big in Japan. They're big in Japan. Out of Framingham, Mass, they are big in Japan. And soon, after this podcast is released,
be huge here.
Huge
in Nevada.
Yes.
There's going to be some
in all the senior citizen homes all around.
Yes. What's that bar that's it's in the Venetian?
Yeah,
it's like the tap.
I can't remember the Venetian name. I used to go
past. It's a really good beer bar right inside the Venetian. I drank Dre Fontaine there. I drank cask beer there. I drank all sorts of interesting
things. Did you ever have Sin City Brewing while you were in Venetian?
Yeah, I drank Sin City. At the Monte Carlo.
And by the way, the next time you guys come to Vegas, you'll have to let us know. There is now a Brewery Row downtown.
I heard that. Yeah.
By Fremont Street. So
amazing.
Literally, when I moved here in 2011, and you were here before me, but when I moved here in 2011, there was one to three breweries, you know, and now it's exploded. And I'm happy to say a lot of them are very good. And we'd love to show you around when you guys come out.
That sounds amazing.
Now, quick note, just tell everybody where they can kind of find you guys as far as, you know, social media, all that fun stuff. So.
Yeah.
So you can find us on exhibit-a-brewing.com. That's our main website. We are Exhibit A Brewing on Facebook, Exhibit A Brewing at Exhibit A Brewing on Instagram and Twitter. So all of those places. And we're now on TikTok too. So
are we on TikTok?
If you're on TikTok, we post stupid stuff on TikTok. So
that's where the best content is.
Yeah.
And if you live in Japan, enjoy the free or enjoy the beer.
Yeah.
Nevada. Sorry, guys. They're not there.
Yeah. But you guys have one of my favorite restaurants, Lotus of Siam.
Oh, Lotus of Siam.
Yeah. Place is incredible.
My wife is obsessed with Lotus of Siam.
It's in the shittiest part of town in a terrible, terrible plaza. And it's like the greatest Thai food you'll ever have.
You want to order for delivery if you can, but if you have to go there, you go there and it's worth it.
It's our first stop. Every trip we've taken 6 years in a row stop was there. Yeah. And then some other sushi joint that I don't remember the name of it, but like near Chinatown. But
there's a lot of good sushi.
Chinatown's good.
Yeah. Scary.
But guys, seriously, like you are like amazing.
You guys are creating a lot of great stuff.
It's nuts. Yeah. You're creating amazing stuff. You sent us all this fantastic beer that we can't even. I mean,
you're working on sustainability.
Crap. Yep.
Can art's incredible. You just made two fans.
Nice.
And for all of our three listeners out there, you got those guys too.
Five fans.
We got five. Woo. Five.
My mom, the seven I lost
yesterday.
Yeah, this has been great, guys. Seriously, thank you so much for joining, and thank you for sharing your fears with us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Derek and I have more things to be scared of because
I am also afraid of podcasts, but not during them, only before they're happening.
Oh, you know,
anxious.
Why we say it. Everything's better with beer. Yep. You know, we have all the things that scare us. You have a couple of beers. There's nothing. You know, the podcast just goes much more smoothly. At least we think so.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds worse, but you know, we enjoy it a little bit more.
Yep.
No, so thanks again, guys. And I know
thanks
you're on
for having us.
We'll let you guys go.
Yep.
We'll let you get to bed on the other side of the country. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Take it easy. Peace out, guys.
We'll be seeing you. So thanks again, guys, for joining
us. Thank you.
We'll cut it off here. But really, I mean, just me, like you guys are doing some really cool work. I really appreciate you guys sharing that all with us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. This was really fun.
So is there anything that you guys wanted to add or anything that you guys want to cut? Anything specifically? I know that's probably a big question after 2 hours of talking, but
yeah, that was great. No, I have I didn't say anything that I would regret.
All right.
Nope.
All right, good.
Even when Derek was going to the bathroom.
I'm so sorry again about calling you. I knew your name, and for what?
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, I fixed that. But other than that, it's fine. My sister's an editor. She's a filmmaker and an editor, so I get the editing thing. I couldn't do it, but I give you guys a lot of credit. I'm trying to think of the hotel. Oh, the Aladdin. I went to see Fish at the Aladdin in like 95 maybe. I slept out at a Smith's grocery store to get tickets for that show.
Oh my gosh.
Went back to the Aladdin. I got my tickets. I had the first four seats right in the front row. And Les Claypool played with them that show, by the way, which was cool. But so I went back to the to the Aladdin box office where all my friends from Flagstaff had gone. And I had learned that you could go to Smith's grocery store to get tickets. I got my tickets. I went back to the box office and there's everybody standing in line waiting still. They hadn't even opened the box office yet. Wow. I've got my tickets in hand. I'm like partying. I'm super psyched. It was a good show. And then we heard a year or two later, I think it was like a year later, that they were going to be imploding that Aladdin. So we went to Vegas that week and watched it happen, which was pretty cool. Yep. So I got to see a hotel getting flattened.
Yeah, Vegas don't do style. Often anymore.
They don't.
They don't do them as like, yeah. They that's no, my
they
brother
just,
said.
Like refab them. They just yeah. like re you know like.
I guess the dust is kind of bad for the environment. I don't know.
They should do
know.
That to the Luxor. The Luxor needs to be destroyed. That place
Luxor is it's yeah, it's an eyesore. And it's a bad part of the town too. Like that South Strip is just
yeah, it's not good. South Strip's good. Awful.
You want to be in the middle of the strip. You don't want to be North Strip. You don't want to be South Strip. It's that mid strip.
Yep.
You know. But nice. Luxor, you know, I don't know. It's such a landmark too. Yeah, I think that they just to take it out.
Them Tropicana in like Flamingo.
Tropicana's going away, man. That's where they're going to put the A's stadium.
Really?
That would be amazing. Well, we haven't got the A's yet, but
that's your plan.
Kind of. I mean, well, we got the Raiders already. We're stealing everything from Oakland.
Yeah. Your hockey
team is awesome too.
Our hockey team is totally. Oh, thank you for saying that. I'm sure you guys are Bruins fans, but
we are.
We love our Knights out here.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for the Knights, and the way that they came on the scene, like it's unbelievable.
It was wild in this town. Yeah. No, I mean, this is Vegas. No one watched hockey out here.
No,
I mean, maybe
they've never seen ice. Have you even seen ice before?
Yeah, no, right. I mean, literally. And then they went to the Stanley Cup championship year one. And I kid you not, I mean, probably 90% of this town has a nice hoodie or a Knight hat or a Knight bumper sticker or a Knight's.
That's cool.
It's insane. After the whole, you know, one October deal.
Yeah,
I think the Knights were something to like really rally around because they were like a hometown team, and they were. So I think that
it was also a team created by castoffs from other teams.
Yes,
you know, it was a misfit. It was a draft of players that nobody else wanted.
Yeah,
and to go to the Stanley Cup Finals is just amazing. Like it was such a Cinderella story. Yeah,
it was. I mean, other than Marc-Andre Fleury, who was like just the perennial all-star.
Yeah, right. Arguably one of the best.
But you had William Karlsson, who scored 40 goals that season. I mean, like, and this was probably a second or third line player at best, you know, on any other team. And somehow he puts up 40 goals in his first year.
Yeah.
Since then, he's only put up like 10 goals a year. But that year one,
it's pretty amazing. The Bees were in. I didn't see who won the game last night, but they played the Avs last night in Denver. Uh-huh. And my brother,
Avalanche.
I am sure you do. My brother loves the Avs, but he lives in Denver and he's a Bruins fan.
Yeah.
The Bees are in town, he is a Bruins fan. And he said that he texted last night and he said that there was nothing but Bruins fans when he got there. Just fields of yellow and black. I was like, sweet, Colorado's coming around. But they love, you know, back especially when they got what's his name?
McKinnon.
No, from the Bruins.
Ray Bourque.
Ray Bourque. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm falling asleep. I got to get rolling. No. It's been so much fun, guys. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. My cats are staging a revolution over here.
You got another one over there.
I got three, man.
You think birds are bad? Look at those cats. They're
going for you.
Yep, they're gathering.
We'll let you know right now. We're going to try about the briefcase quarter. That's the one we're going to do next.
Thanks. Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah, this is my podcast.